Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Hello, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Very good. Look at you. You got your winter hat on. Weather is happening all around us all the time.
I'm wearing a sweater.
So am I, actually, yeah.
I'll soon have a cup of tea. I will cup it with two hands and go, this weather that's coming in.
I'm headed up to a wedding this weekend in Poughkeepsie, and I'm very excited about the foliage.
I would say a lot of it's on its way toward the ground now at this point.
I actually saw a map of peak foliage in New York right now, and I'm driving right into the heart of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you going to go for a walk amongst it?
A long, soulful walk. Yeah.
What music will be playing in your head as this walk happens?
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
That's very you, all right.
Yeah.
I see you have a gift.
So I was going to wait until the mailbag section.
Wait till mailbag then.
Okay.
All right.
But a listener sent us an actual gift, and it's unbelievable, the generosity. I'm blown away.
We've had a handwritten letter, beer invites,
this was
and now this.
I have here. Accompanied by a handwritten letter.
Good Lord.
Amazing work by
Save it for the mailbag.
Lee Sterling. You have outdone yourself, my friend.
Lee Sterling.
Yeah, what, do you know him?
No, but he sounds like an ex-footballer. Sterling on the wing.
Because of Raheem Sterling?
No, but Lee
You're
Sterling.
Very creative. That's a beautiful segue, though. Whether it was accidental or not, we'll never know. But we're going to act like it was on purpose. Because we're going to talk about the international break and... if you're going to talk international break, how do you not talk about England?
So England. I'll tell you what, Andrew, right? Football's coming home. It's the biggest result, right? It's the biggest result since 66, all right? Are you listening, right? Biggest result, right? And I'll tell you something. My father, he was in Wembley. He was in Wembley in 66. He said, if we beat Spain 3-2 in 2018, it's coming home, innit?
It's been quite a year for that voice that you do.
It has.
It is funny. Like, do you view these UEFA Nations League matches as friendlies or as a competition? Because my mind hasn't decided yet.
So they are meant to be competitive, and they will set ranking. Like, so for the example of England and Spain, they are less competitive than, say, for Wales and the Republic of Ireland, because we're going to end up third seeds because of the defeats we've had in these competitive games. That said, if you're England and Spain, you're going to qualify anyway. Let's be honest. They're going to qualify out of the regular qualifiers.
It's probably a time where the Dutch felt that way, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. So this is a competitive game. It's better than a friendly, but it's not even a proper qualifier. So my mind is a little bit tricked. Have you been watching friendlies of late and gone, is this Nations League or friendly?
Well, yeah, I mean, because not every European match is a Nations League match. Most of them are.
But a lot of teams have a Nations League game and then they have a friendly or vice versa.
Yeah.
So for example...
I have been under the assumption when I turn on the TV that what I'm watching is Nations League.
I'm just going with it.
Yeah.
So Belgium's great game the other day against the Netherlands, where Dries Mertens scored a really cool goal, that was a friendly. And I laboured under the illusion that it was a Nations League game. But it wasn't. The Nations League game had happened previously, and that was Netherlands-Germany, which we'll get to.
Yeah. But we start with aforementioned England, as they really impress against Spain. We're up 3-0 at one point. It ends 3-2. Man, it was exciting. It was very exciting. English Andy was very happy.
Old English Andy, he's very happy. He's very happy and he's nappy.
Yeah, well, I was very happy for a couple reasons. For one, you know how over the summer English Andy developed a real affinity towards Raheem Sterling. And I felt like Raheem Sterling shut up a lot of the naysayers in this match. Maybe I'm reading too much into just one game.
He
played so well, I thought, and I was very, very proud of him.
He shut up the English naysayers, the core group of English fans who, and probably a lot of the tabloid newspapers who have a serious problem with him. He hadn't scored since 2015, but I would argue that, I mean, that dovetails into a large part of the Hodgson era, where he was played in a different position. And he kind of explained that in the post-match a little bit, that he felt he was, in this current setup, he's in more of a position to score. if you know what
One
I mean.
Goal quickly became two tonight. Do you feel like in an England shirt, this is the start of something for you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the times I was coming to the ball to feet a lot and not really making, you know, those runs in behind that I do at my club. And, you know, I've analysed it and tried to be more effective with that and tried to get in behind and get in the box much more.
Might be pretty much it. And also you play with much better players at Manchester City and the opportunities to score are much more.
That could be true, although the partnership between him and Harry Kane looked to be a pretty fruitful one.
It did. I don't want to read too much into this one because we have seen England put in, like people are saying, it's the best performance of a generation. I have seen England play very well. The 5-1 in Munich in 2001, that was a World Cup qualifier, mind.
Yeah.
Don't forget the they won away in a friendly in Berlin, where Rooney and Michael Owen scored. I think that was in 2011.
Can I ask you a question?
I just don't want to read too much into this.
Well, you say that. I want to ask you about that. When are we allowed to read into what we see? Like, and by that I mean we don't want to read too much into this. Even though Spain played an A squad, England went to Seville and beat them 3-2. But we don't want to read too much into that. Fine. But, you know, but when England go through qualifying campaigns, at the end of it, when they go undefeated with one draw, you know, and the rest wins, we say, well, that was impressive, but you can't read into that. Like, when are we allowed to look at England or insert any nation here? Like, when are we allowed to read into anything that we see outside of a World Cup or a European Championship?
Well, because when it comes to the crunch, England don't put in these kind of performances, and they were still...
But they just went to the semifinals of a World Cup.
But I'm not chopping through the World Cup again with you. The path they took,
I understand,
to that, and when they met a team that had a player that could keep the ball and that could play through midfield and could basically outpossess England for long periods and they had a cutting edge, they were sorely, sorely beaten. They were beaten 2-1, but I mean, Croatia were far and away the better team.
I mean, they beat Colombia. Look, I don't want to rehash that, but
yeah,
like,
let's not. But,
so we're just never, like, even the World Cup isn't suitable for us to judge England.
I just.
Do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, when can we say, good job, England played really well, their fans should be happy? Like, we never allow ourselves
July 1966. When they won the World Cup. Yeah, it probably is a little bit unfair because the way they took the goals was exceptional. They defended very well. But in terms of controlling a game in the traditional manner, like Spain played into their hands a little bit. They played a very high line. Sergio Ramos looks... I mean, we're talking about defenders and we will be talking about Jerome Boateng. We're talking about guys who seem to be on the way out. Ramos seems to be in a bit of a funk as well. And... a high line against this English team just played right into their hands. But again, look, Spain hadn't been beaten on Spanish soil since 2003. So maybe I should be more magnanimous and take my hat off and just say, well done, England. But when you look at the possession stats, which are not everything, but do tell a tale in terms of who controlled the game for the most part, the shots on goal, I mean, Spain had 23 shots on goal, 5 on target.
Well, I think some of that will be skewed when Spain goes down early, the dynamic of a game changes. Like,
well,
England suddenly...
That's fair.
You know,
that's
it
fair.
Was 3-0 in the first half.
Yeah, you're
right?
Chasing it. Spain are chasing it, and nobody's better than keeping the ball. But there's also no team better than making a lot of passes that don't necessarily mean anything. We saw that against Russia in the World Cup. Maybe, you know what? You're right. I will... look at this game as a competitive game, which England were excellent, and that I should read into it that they are a very good team that got to a World Cup semi-final. And from now on, I should look at them as potential European Championship winners in 2020.
Wow, English JJ.
Come on, England!
Can we also say RIP, here lies the narrative that Harry Kane is tired? Like, he's been in great form with Spurs.
I still think Harry Kane is getting over an injury he never got a chance to rest for. And I don't think... this is the extent to his excellent past few years, is that right now, Andrew, I don't think he's 100%, and yet he's still...
well, he's playing so well
and yet
for
he's
club
still,
and country.
He's still producing, yeah. Fine.
The Spanish press walked away from that match like Harry Kane was just like he descended from the heavens. Like... you can already see that the Real Madrid fervor is
somebody
going to be
like
up.
Somebody like, forget old English Andy, old Spursy Andy. The last thing he needed was Harry Kane playing well on Spanish soil. Oh no! He was excellent. Yep, he was very, very good. And I thought Barkley's assist, well, not assist, his beautiful ball through to Kane to set up Sterling's second goal. How good was that? Yeah. It was excellent. So you know what? Yes. England played very, very well, and I should not be so hypercritical. But I'm conditioned to be that way for years and years.
It's understandable because England have for years and years been a disappointment. But as we all know, football has come home. You mentioned Sergio Ramos, and he was one of the focal points in this match for reasons that maybe he's not always accustomed to. And that was because Eric Dier put a target on Sergio Ramos and just decided, I don't care what is happening around us. I am taking you out,
and
I'm taking
ball and man in a tackle that was probably last in vogue in 1995. And also, he did it in an area of the field. It was like totally unnecessary.
He wanted the world to see it.
Yeah, in the penalty box.
Yeah,
and there was no attempt to nick the ball. By the way, not if anyone hasn't seen it, there was no attempt for Dier to nick the ball from Ramos and create an offensive play. No. He saw him dally slightly, and he smashed him. What used to be called a reducer.
Well, this wasn't like, he wasn't trying to break Ramos's ankles.
No.
He just wanted to let him know that I'm here.
No, it's called a reducer. It's called a ball and man. You get everything. And he did. It was a great tackle. I loved it.
Yeah, because I know you're no fan of Dyer's, but I know that you're not really the biggest Sergio Ramos fan necessarily as well.
To see the confused look on Ramos's face when he got smashed by Dier.
So this is what it feels like when I do this to everyone. I'm with you, man. I said good for Dier watching that happen. There are certain guys that if he had done that too, maybe I would have called it a cheap shot.
But
it's Ramos.
But hang on. This is... I want you to listen to your words for a second.
Okay.
This is how the game has been sanitized. There was nothing wrong with that tackle. Nothing. He won the ball and he took the man.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
That was part of the game.
But we don't see that ever. No one does this.
No, because if you touch the man after you've won the ball at all, it's a free kick. That's good. Ball and man has gone out of the game. And in Ramos's case, nearly into the stands. Now, by the way, you mentioned Eric Dier. Somebody loves Eric Dier, and on the basis of this game, is willing to cast him in quite the light.
Yeah, this is Big Sam, Sam Allardyce, on the Alan Brazil Sports Breakfast, comparing Dier to Sergio Busquets.
The praise about Busquets, must be stopped, was never evident last night, because he's no better or worse than Eric Dier for me, and Eric Dier to grow in. Busquets is a sitting midfield player that breaks it up, intercepts and passes it very simply and is intelligent. That's what he is. He's not much more than that, but gets a huge amount of praise for it, whereas Eric Dier does a similar job, but sometimes gets a lot of criticism for it. I'm only saying that he's got the capabilities of being that. If the rest of the team is as good as Spanish has been with Busquets, and Busquets has been a great player at Barcelona, don't get me wrong, but he's a very effective pick, first pick for every manager. Because he plays such a simple game. And because he plays such a simple game, he's great for the team. But we laud him as a genius, mm-hmm. whereas our own, we don't. We criticise, and that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But I mean, Dyer's got to
Eric Dier was far better than Busquets last night.
Fair as that may be,
fine.
It's quite a statement.
He kind of tried to walk it back. But you know what's interesting about this? It's not that it's not that we're hearing Sam Allardyce say that. It's everything we suspected Sam Allardyce was in his years of management when he was at Sunderland, when he was at West Ham, when he was at Bolton. We suspected that Sam Allardyce would be on the sideline, or he'd be at home having a cup of tea watching the Champions League because Bolton weren't in it. And he'd see someone like a Busquets and he'd look at him and he'd say, no time for that. Square passes, keeping the ball. Get down the... We suspected these were his views, but you would never hear him air that. Now that he doesn't have a job, now that he's free to talk to Alan Brazil on TalkSport, we now can see inside his mind.
Yeah, he's like Ben McAdoo.
These are the views he always held. Everything we suspected about him being archaic and a caveman manager, kind of true.
Comments like this are so funny, and you can do this in any sport. Look, I don't know. Is he insane for saying it? Who knows? It's very, very difficult to to compare Busquets playing in Barcelona's system to, like, okay, well,
sorry,
look, if you swap Dier and Busquets, maybe Dier would be Busquets. Like, I don't care.
They're not
that's
the
just
same
like an impossible
player.
Game to play. But I'm confident in saying that Sergio Busquets is one of the best defensive midfielders of his generation. And for a statement like that to have been made...
on the back of a UEFA Nations League game is quite something.
Coming off a season, and I get what Big Sam is trying to do, because he's basically talking to you, JJ, because you've been an Eric Dier hater for the better part of 2 years now.
Yeah, I don't know what he does. I know what Busquets
does. I think that Eric Dier kind of showed a little bit of what he does. I'm not saying he does this game in, game out, but I'll tell you this right now. It's not the first time I've seen it. I saw him do it to Cesc Fabregas. I saw him do it to Tom Cleverley. I mean, he's really physical. I think he's he wants to be known, I think, as an imposing figure.
But Sam's not talking about his physicality. He's talking about his ability to play.
And distribute the ball.
Yeah, and you, Andrew Gundling, shall not sit here from me on this fall evening.
It's not what Eric Dier is known for on Tottenham. That is certainly true. But here's what Dier had to say about this incident with Sergio Ramos and kind of setting a tone for this new England. He said, I think it's really important that we respect our opponents, and Ramos is one of the best of all time, really. It's important to respect them, but at the same time, once we start the game, it's every man for himself, and we have to put our foot down, put a marker down, and be aggressive. Still with respect, but we have to be aggressive, be on the front foot, and show that nothing is going to intimidate us. That's just as important as playing good football and all the other aspects. I think Ramos is a great example of that. He does everything so well, but at the same time, he puts his foot down, and he's not going to be bullied. We have to be the same way.
It sounds like a mad foreign policy document that either the Democrats or the Republicans came up with. Aggressive respect. We're going to treat foreign countries with aggressive respect. Like, it doesn't really, I don't know how that works. Like, you're smashing through someone. He's smashing through Sergio Ramos. He hits him up in the air. Take that, I still think you're very good.
Right. We respect North Korea, and that is why we are going to destroy you.
Yeah, aggressive respect.
Yeah.
Respect through strength.
But I get what he's saying, though. I think he's trying to almost ride the coattails of this brilliant summer that England's coming off of. And I think he wants to remind people, like, in his way, that was not a flash in the pan. Like, this is a new group. This is not players of the past that were intimidated going into hostile environments against great clubs like that, great national teams. That's not what we are. We're not afraid of them. What happened this summer, we're going to continue that. Like, I think he's just trying to keep whatever tone was set in the World Cup. I think he's in his way trying to keep that going.
I hear what you're saying. And to be fair, against Croatia in the second half of that game, it's not like they even got close to them to get the ball or to show some aggressive respect.
Yeah. And look, maybe it was dirty, maybe it was cheap, but, you know.
Look, I enjoyed it. I told you, I like a good meaty tackle. I said that to you before, even when I play. Like, I like to leave the first tackle, leave a little bit on it, you know.
I mean, in the Champions League final, you probably would have enjoyed having Eric Dier on a night where Sergio Ramos is elbowing Lloris Karius and taking Mohamed Salah down to the ground. I mean, these, like, somebody needed to do that to Ramos
in
that game.
Yes, yes, yes. What Liverpool needed was, alongside Jordan Henderson, Eric Dier. Yeah, yeah. We needed that England midfield together. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's funny that you almost feel like, and Eric Dier is very well liked by Tottenham fans, but he converted the winning penalty against Colombia. Now he does this to Sergio Ramos. Like, you feel like he's emerging as more of like an English hero than as like a club hero. He could be one of these club over country guys that or country over club guys that we talk about.
You hope he isn't.
let's see. France come back and they beat Germany. This came on the heels of Germany getting throttled, sort of, by the Netherlands. Mm.
In a Nations League game.
Okay. Thank you. What is happening here?
Well, 6 defeats in 1 year is what's happening, and it's never happened before to Germany.
In 10 matches, they've lost 6.
You want to hear Daniel Story's even better stat?
Yeah.
Since November 2014, Germany have only won one match against the world's current top 10 ranked nations. That was a friendly versus England, March 2017. Mm. That's 12 attempts. So you could say that since 2014, since the World Cup win, they have been in, I suppose you can't really call it a decline, because they went to the semi-finals of Euro 2016 and were unlucky not to advance into the final. So I don't know if it's a decline. But you know what struck me? for the second game. So if you look at the team he put out for the first game against the Netherlands. By the way, just so, they still created chances against the Netherlands.
Oh, JJ, I have all these numbers here that will support the idea that maybe things like
aren't as bad as we think.
Kind of. They are and they aren't.
So,
I'll go through it.
So before you do, but Sané, Werner and Müller, no surprise there with Werner and Müller anyway, missed massive chances.
Yeah.
Do you want to statutize me?
Well, here's the thing. They've got one goal in their last four games, and it was from the penalty spot in this most recent game against France. So they haven't scored from open play.
No.
Now, it's easy, like you're saying, to jump to the conclusion that their time in the sun is over. People aren't afraid of Germany anymore. That the
I don't
shine
think
is
it's
off.
That.
Right. I don't know that it is either. Here's the deal. Like you say, it's not like they're not generating chances. 11 shots versus France. 21 shots versus the Dutch. Back in September when they went 0-0 against France, 13 shots in that game. Then, of course, there was that last game in the World Cup against Korea. They were shut out 2-0. They attempted 26 shots. Now, here's the problem, and it's the thing with Germany that we talked about heading into the World Cup. They have good players all over the field, except in one crucial position since the departure of Miroslav Klose. They don't really have an heir apparent for who's going to be that center forward. In the game against France, it's Serge Gnabry up front.
Yeah,
he's got zero goals this season for his club. In the game against the Dutch, it's Mark Uth up front.
Right.
Zero goals this season
for
Schalke.
Hang on. Müller was one side and Timo Werner was the other against the Dutch. Now,
I'm talking about a central attacking striker.
Müller's decline has unfortunately coincided in the last couple of years, certainly from 2017 onwards, has coincided with this search for a striker. And his goals have dried up. He, in fairness to Lowe, he did play a different Jogi Löw, Joachim Löw. He played a different team and a different formation against France, and they seem to be better.
Yeah. Also, in fairness to him, it's France. France are probably better than Germany. It's not.
And France were bad in the first half of that game.
Yeah, I mean, Germany held a 1-0 lead and two second-half Antoine Griezmann goals, a penalty, and then, that's not. It's not embarrassing for Germany to go to France and lose 2-1.
Can I posit something to you that a friend of mine who is a German football fan suggested to me?
Of course.
That when we saw the 2017 Confederations Cup team and all these new faces and players, that Lowe kind of said that's the B team. When really, he should have integrated more of those players into the 2014 team or into the 2018 World Cup team.
Yeah.
Like when they played that well, when they like dismantled Mexico. Remember that game? Mm-hmm. Like that was close to Mexico's first team. That was a very strong Mexican team.
Right. And it almost felt like the arrival of like a sort of a new German generation.
So you can't stunt that arrival. You've got to go with them. And I'm not saying.
So who is he taking out of that squad that was at the World Cup? To replace with some, like, there were guys from that team that were on the World Cup squad. Who's he taking out?
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, he didn't see it ahead of time. He didn't.
Are you talking about Leroy Sané?
Well, Sané should have gone. Stindl should have gone. You know, I'm just saying maybe the new crop had arrived and he wasn't ready to transition. And once the arrival happens, you can't go back to the old.
So are they in crisis?
For them, yeah, but I don't think
they're in danger of being relegated from this top flight of the Nations League.
Yeah, down to Nations League B,
which
thankfully Ireland will be relegated out of, so we won't have to face them, and we'll be down in C, baby. Relegation works.
That's what this is all about, is avoiding Germany, as I guess, as long as possible. So they are in crisis. Well, if you're going to say that,
I don't know if I believe. I don't believe that they will act as if they're in crisis. And the crisis,
if they were going to act as if they were, that means the manager is in trouble.
Yeah, but we've heard nothing like that come out of Germany yet, that they're going to get rid of him. Nothing. Not
no,
even.
We haven't. But I will say this: look, he's a tremendous manager. But like, suddenly, it's not crazy to me to start to think about, okay, Germany didn't get out of a group at the World Cup that was hardly considered the group of death. And now, for whatever this is, it looks like he's in danger of having Germany relegated from this top division of the Nations League. Like, that's two things in close proximity, on the heels of, you know, what seems to be some discontent within the German camp. Players like Mesut Ozil, Ilkay Gundogan leaving, whatever issues there are with Leroy Sané. Like, there are now pieces that you can put together if you're trying to put together this puzzle of does the manager deserve to be fired or not. Like, you, if you're in the camp of yes, fire him, it's not like you don't have some ground to stand on.
You do.
Like, how many years does a World Cup victory buy you?
Yes, but German football generally, what do? Andrew, they take a long view, particularly since the 2000s. After Euro 2000 and the way they kind of redid things, they've taken a long view, and it's also been a measured view. And I'm not sure that they're ready to pull the trigger on him yet. And also, you've got to ask yourself, well, maybe they're looking at it and they're saying, right, we can sack him, but do we have someone that's going to come in and basically replace him and do the things we need done? And maybe they want to play this out a little bit.
Well, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on it for sure.
Look at the midfield from the 4-1 defeat of Mexico. Uh-huh. Heinrichs, Goretzka, Rudy, Hector, Stindl, Draxler, Werner. That's the front seven, we'll say. Heinrichs, Goretzka, Rudy, Hector in midfield. Lars Stindl, Julian Draxler, Timo Werner up front. I don't know. Maybe it was time to bring more of them to the big show.
I mean, that's all fair, but let me read to you now who they were playing up front in that final game against Korea at the World Cup. Timo Werner was up front, and then behind him was a three of Marco Reus on the left, Ozil in the middle, and Goretzka on the right. And then they had two defensive midfielders in Kroos and Khedira. So, yeah. Like, you have to like that. It's fine and good to say more guys should have been playing a role for them from that Confederations Cup side, but you have Goretzka was out there, Timo Werner was out there. Who are you removing? Not Kroos. And I guess now in hindsight you could say Ozil, but in the moment would you have said that? Marco Reus, would you have taken him off? I don't know. It's
hindsight, but yeah. it's just something that was brought up to me, and I thought interesting. And Werner definitely didn't kick on in the World Cup like we thought he would.
I would agree. Yep. Let's see. We continue now. Oh, with this, JJ, it's back. Your baldness.
Ugh.
I know it's hiding under that hat of yours.
That's probably
why
you
are wearing a winter hat inside. That can be the only reason. It's probably about 72 degrees in here, and yet you're wearing a winter hat.
Maybe the hat's really comfortable, and I'm trying to look like Colin Farrell.
Maybe it's because you're one of the 66% of men who lose their hair by the age of 35. Is that possible? I don't see anything peeking out the sides of that. The thing is, when you start to notice hair
loss... You've seen my head in the last week.
It means that it's already too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have rather than replace the hair you've lost. That hairline's slowly starting to move back. Bald spots? Are you seeing them? Well, I ask you this. Do you want a bald spot to pop up? Do you want something? Do you want to do something about it first? Do you want your hairline to recede, or do you want to do something about it first? Here's the solution, everybody. 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and other wellness supplements for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting rooms, no awkward in-person doctor visits. You save hours just by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy. Just answer a few quick questions. The doctor will review and then prescribe you. Products are shipped directly to your door. It is just that easy. Order now. Listeners to this podcast get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last.
Can I get a solution at the gas station?
A gas station supplement?
Yeah.
You can, but it probably won't work.
Ugh.
This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. But we're telling you, just go to 4hims.com/offside. That's FORHIMS.com/offside. 4hims.com/offside. There you go.
I will do that.
All right, JJ, as we know, it's been an international break, but the league returns this weekend. We look at these international breaks, I feel like, as mile markers along the way over the course of these long seasons. So we kind of take stock in where we're at so far. And to do that with us right now, chief football writer from The Independent on the program with us, Miguel Delaney. Miguel, what's up, man?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course.
Miguel, we thought we'd start with, despite Andrew's introduction about the league, you were in Seville on Monday and to see England play Spain, and we were talking about, well, Andrew basically got angry with me, as Americans tend to do over here when an Irish person maybe raises an eyebrow at an English result and doesn't quite buy in straight away. So you were there. How excited should we be or, well, how excited were you about the way England played, and are they believable now?
To be honest, I was a little bit reticent in terms of kind of praise of England during the World Cup, because I think Southgate did very well, but it was kind of almost, he did well pragmatically in that he made pieces fit around what he didn't have. And they got a little bit of the luck of the draw in terms of, you know, how that side of the competition fell, how we used set pieces, all that. But so it was almost like a qualified for praise, and because I don't think they ever really put in a truly convincing display,
right,
of what you would expect from a World Cup semi-finalist. But that was the thing. This first half in Spain was basically the convincing display that their World Cup was missing. And maybe it shows that the World Cup almost came a little too soon for what is a very promising young team, but it will provide them with the kind of confidence to do what they did on Monday. Because, I mean, some of the attacking, some of the kind of lightning counter-attack, and particularly the way they went through the middle of the pitch against the Spain midfield of Busquets, Thiago, I mean, that was serious stuff.
Yeah.
Miguel, looking at the Premier League this weekend, the premier match, obviously, is the one that will kick things off on Saturday, Chelsea and Manchester United. JJ and I have talked a lot about this with respect to Chelsea. A new manager came in a little bit late, wanted to implement a pretty new system. Did you think they'd be clicking like this so early on in the season?
Well, I think that's actually the weird thing. I don't think they have really clicked yet in the sense of what you would fully expect from a Sarri side. And even, I could actually just write a piece now that's going to be from the Independent tomorrow, about kind of pressing and all of that. And Klopp has actually adapted his approach, because his own pressing is much more calculated. Like, say, see against City, he actually waits, he sits off, lures the opposition to traps so they can only pass down certain areas, and then pounds. Whereas against Chelsea, he realised that team is still learning what Sarri is trying to do, so Liverpool pressed so much higher in that game. And I think it did have some effect, even though actually the flip side was that Jorginho actually was able to pick out a pass in the space in behind for the opening goal. But it's quite weird. So Chelsea, it's almost like they've shown another quality, that kind of winning rhythm and a certain amount of resilience without being at their best. So I actually expect them to be much better as the season goes on, have a much level higher performance, which might be ironic because I don't think they can quite sustain this winning run. I still expect them to finish maybe third.
Miguel, on United, I see this morning that Luke Shaw has been given an extended long-term contract at United, which makes me wonder who's pulling the strings there, because it doesn't seem like a very Mourinho thing to do, although what is a Mourinho thing to do right now? How do you see this playing out? Was the Newcastle turnaround a stay of execution? What's your feel about where this is going?
I've thought of some time, I do think this will be Mourinho's last season at United for a variety of reasons. And I think, had Newcastle stayed 2-0, or had they lost the game, he could well have been sacked during the international break. I think that was impossible at all. But my sense has always been that it's not going to get quite as bad as what Chelsea was 2015-16. And it kind of grinded out to a sufficient level, so they're there or thereabouts, so it goes on all season. But I think they kind of, a lot of people, there will be a realisation maybe they need to change at the end of the game. Part of this as well is actually United can't get who they ideally want, which would be Pochettino, or any sort of kind of viable replacement right now. Even the talk is that Dan would want too much control they're willing to give. But I do think kind of Mourinho will play out the season at least. And even like signings like Shaw, there's some talk that Mourinho now wants it to happen, and he is playing Shaw, of course, in the way he was in the last 2 years. But ultimately, this is about United securing their future and the future of long-term players, and to a certain degree, looking beyond Mourinho, as they should, because at this point in the game, no club should ever be making decisions based on the kind of complete approach of one single manager, given how changeable managers now are.
Miguel, you did a very interesting piece in The Independent about possible Saudi interest and looking beyond the reign of the Glazers. It's well worth checking out, and everybody should. But apart from that, do you know how the Glazers view the current tumult at United?
I think what the Glazers view is basically the account that club is making money for them. Then, this is actually a huge issue for United in that. And I suppose to give Woodward some due, it's why they're looking to bring in a technical football department, because there's that almost disconnect between the football side and the financial side. And and the feeling is the football side doesn't matter as much. They're still making money, which they will do because they're Manchester United. Now, there are, of course, bigger questions about how long that can last. They're not winning trophies, not playing exciting football, all the rest of it. But for the moment, United, their figures are very good, and that's what the Glazers like.
Miguel, I wanted to get your thoughts on Tottenham. They've got a fairly big game this weekend, London Derby against West Ham. It's been a weird season for them. The transfer saga, Kane's fitness questions, Ali and Eriksen injured, the whole Hugo Lloris thing, the stadium issue. And yet, here they are. I think it's with the most points that they've ever had in the Premier League at this stage in the season. I mean, how, like, if you're a Tottenham fan, how are you supposed to view how this season has gone so far?
Well, given about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was talk of how it had all reached a glass ceiling and you know, Pochettino has been facing big questions in the press room, and it's gone very well in that regard. And maybe it does show, I suppose. Well, I think this is partly to do with, because it's early in the season, kind of trends haven't developed, that there can almost be two or three bad results can almost be talked up a bit too much in that time. And I've often felt this with teams around kind of September to November, that basically it's almost like the badge of crisis just kind of jumps around depending on who has kind of two bad results in a row, where things actually aren't that bad, although I do think Manchester United are different in that regard. But with Spurs, once again, Pochettino is kind of steadying things. And once again, I suppose, I think what is really impressive at Spurs is how they just sustain this level when they really shouldn't be at that level. I mean, compare, if you look at that team, the depth of it, the wages they're paying compared to all their rivals, they should really be fifth or sixth, but they once again, I completely backed them for a top four finish. I think even though Arsenal are on a better run of results, I think Spurs are a much better team than Arsenal still.
Miguel, last one for me. I'm getting a lot of concerned tweets from Liverpool fans. We've got a lot of listeners who are Liverpool fans, and there was an interesting email we got that kind of ties into a theme of something Jamie Carragher discussed on Sky Sports about basically the toll that the Klopp system takes on players, and we see Liverpool have a spate of injuries now. How concerned are you about Liverpool?
I wouldn't be that concerned, to be honest. I think they will still push Chelsea hardest. Well, I mean, I think Klopp actually made a very relevant point after the Man City match, where he thought he actually brought himself the issue of intensity and said, well, you know, what you really have to look at is the break after the World Cup, and I think he's completely right. Gareth Southgate even said it last week that a lot of Premier League clubs had to adapt their pre-season fitness programs so they could basically, players would be sufficiently ready in the ridiculously short 3 weeks between the World Cup final and the Community Shield. So I wouldn't have concerns for Klopp in general or Liverpool at the moment, because I think this is, I mean, you can even see it in the other European leagues at Bayern Munich, at Barcelona, Real Madrid, even if there have been other factors there. I think a lot of top players we are seeing a real hangover after the World Cup.
Miguel Delaney, chief football writer from The Independent. Good stuff, man. We look forward to reading you all throughout the week. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, lad. Thank you.
Oh, mailbag?
Yes, mailbag. @SuoSoccerPod on Twitter, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com. Bob Duggan wants to extend the Mourinho-Jackson Pollock comparison. Oh. When asked if he painted from nature, Pollock famously replied, "I am nature." I think the Mourinho equivalent would be asking the special one if he coached football, and he replied, "I am football." People looked at
I could easily see that happening.
So true. People looked at Pollock as someone who literally threw paint around and broke all the rules by going with his gut. But that gut came after learning all the rules, internalising them, and using his imagination, intuition to create something new. Trusting that gut got Pollock into art history. It also got him into a lot of trouble and labelled as arrogant. Hmm. I think Jose's gut gets him into football history and into trouble and arrogance labels the same way. Hook Pep, Klopp, or any other brand name gaffer to a lie detector and ask that question, and you'd find they'd all reply, "I am football," or else they'd be lying. And he said if they didn't believe that, they'd be less great than they each are, which is fair enough.
Probably true.
Bryce Barker. Now, this is interesting.
It's a good name. Solid name.
Solid name. JJ and Andrew, what an opening gambit. I'm not that much of a soccer fan.
I don't know why.
But I never miss your podcast. I've been listening for the last couple of years and always find them fun, informative, and interesting. And then your last podcast went above and beyond. JJ, your use of Pollock and Caravaggio in explaining Manchester United performance was amazing. I can't believe there's ever been a podcast that used those two artists in explanation of a sporting match. It was wonderful. I've always thought it would be great to come to New York to have a pint with you, but now if I did come to New York, I'd rather go to the Met or MoMA and have JJ rhapsodise on which Premier League club is Cubist versus Impressionist. Thanks for making my day. Keep up the great work. Your avid listener, Bryce from Vancouver, Washington.
You can do that. I will be waiting for you at the bar.
By the way, for a t-shirt, we are the soccer podcast for people who aren't really into soccer. Brian Vargas on the Twitter machine. I went shopping for vinyl today and found a 45 of We Didn't Start the Fire.
Oh, dear God.
I sang EPL Back for More in my head.
EPL Back for More. I hate myself for having done that.
Release the full version.
EPL Back for More.
Jed Vorhoff, what are the chances you think BWP will suit up for Jamaica in the 2019 Gold Cup? From Jamaica's standpoint, I know he'll be 34 by the summer, but A, he'd still be their best striker. B, even if he wouldn't really be in the plans for World Cup 2022 qualification, potentially winning their first Gold Cup might be pretty alluring. We've never asked him about harbouring ambitions for England because we just thought that ship had sailed. Even though he's done so well in MLS, it's not like when Beckham came over, who was already an established member of the English team and could go back. Like, the last level BWP played at was for Brentford in League One.
Yeah, he kind of made his name here.
Yes, so it's unlikely to... Like, it's the same for Dom Dwyer. Dom Dwyer was never going to get called into the English squad.
No.
So, suiting up for Jamaica. I don't know what his feelings are on that. Does he want to not add the... Because it'll be in the middle of an MLS season, don't forget. Does he not want to jeopardise injury and things like that by playing for Jamaica? Because he's come good at in his 30s as well, don't forget. So,
yeah, I mean, how come, like, why is this only being brought up now?
I've heard it before, but I've never heard him speak on it.
Yeah, well, I see here, back in 2016, he said he was very interested in representing Jamaica. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't.
Yeah.
Like, he's been of that quality for a long time. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it.
If I was the Jamaican FA, I would pursue it aggressively. Yeah. Matt Silsby, I just wanted to bring this to your attention if you didn't already know about it. Usain Bolt has signed with the Central Coast Mariners in the A-League here in Australia. He has played in a couple of preseason warm-up matches against teams in the tier below the A-League. He scored 2 goals, actually.
He sure did.
This whole situation got me thinking about JJ's hypothetical question of putting yourself at maximum fitness into the Premier League and how many goals you would score. Now, this isn't the Premier League by any stretch of the imagination, but Bolt did score twice in tonight's match. The first goal was a legit goal. It was a good finish, and the second one was a joke. The goalkeeper and the centre-half bashed into each other. And I've seen him, he tried it in Norway as well, he went on trial. I saw the videotape from Norway, he was beyond dreadful. But I applaud him for chasing this dream. I'm not sure if Central Coast Mariners are going to give him a contract, though. Because I heard
a club in Valletta.
Valletta in Malta, which would be
he has turned them down, reportedly.
I would imagine he thinks he's going to get somewhere in Australia. I don't think he's good enough, but I applaud him for being able to pivot as well as he has. Thoughts?
I love when I see athletes do this.
You love it?
I
don't think it's good for the Australian game now that Central Coast Mariners, a relatively big team, are doing this, by the way.
Well, they have not extended him a contract, so they haven't done anything yet.
Okay.
But I don't know. I kind of feel the way you do. Like, if he loves soccer and he
is in a position to chase it.
Fortunately for him, maybe people can be jealous if they want, but his fame has presented him with an opportunity. And, like, he scored 2 goals in a game. That's, like, he hasn't played soccer competitively probably in
years, decades.
Yeah, that's impressive. Like, I don't love Tim Tebow. But for me, the fact that he was able to play competitive AA minor league baseball and play it well, like hit like 250, which is not an easy thing to do when you haven't done it for years. I'm just generally impressed by that. I think that's a level of athleticism that not everyone can achieve. Michael Jordan's one of the best basketball players I've ever seen. He tried to go back and play minor league baseball, and it was kind of a disaster for him. It's not easy.
I think chasing your dream with such abandon and such rigor is a good thing. Teddy Marek, love your podcast. Quit Twitter years ago, sucking it up to follow you guys. Aman had a better showing than Kenny Safe, wouldn't you say? Where the heck is Novakovic? Come on, Sarakin. We would direct you towards our other podcast this week, where we talk in depth about the US men's national team. But Teddy, thank you for taking on the slings and arrows of Twitter. And finally, it's what the people have requested over the weekend, Andrew. I need you to play the Thierry Henry goal audio, and I need you then to play some sexy French music.
Henry! What a goal! Inspiration for Arsenal from Thierry Henry.
Have a look at one of the greatest goals I've seen on this ground. That's deliberate. That's majestic.
Maintenant, c'est un temps pour regarder Thierry Henry. Va-va-voom.
So, Thierry Henry has been installed as manager of his former club, the club that brought him to prominence, Monaco. He said in his press conference that not Arsene Wenger, but Pep Guardiola is the reference for me. I'm not saying for everyone. So his 2 years under Pep, 2008 to 2010, are going to influence how he approaches this job in Ligue 1. Monaco are one win in nine and lie in 18th in Ligue 1. They visit the Alsace region on Saturday to play Strasbourg in his first game.
Maintenant, c'est un temps pour regarder Thierry Henry.
Good for him. We're starting to see this next generation of manager, JJ. Lampard, Gerrard, Henry.
Yeah. Land plum jobs without really doing the kind of old school apprenticeship that a lot of managers had to do.
Well, define apprenticeship. I mean, Thierry Henry was an assistant manager
in international football at Belgium. That's not, while he still held down a Sky Sports punditry gig, Frank Lampard did his UEFA B, and I believe he did his UEFA Pro license. But that's it.
Yeah, but okay. But that's it. But he's also not come right into the Premier League. He's starting in the Championship. Gerrard is starting in the Scottish.
Yeah, he started in the Championship at Derby County, a team that was, I wouldn't say primed to go up, but are not far off it. And Gerrard's landed one of the biggest job in Scottish football. I don't know. After managing the under-19s in it.
So what do you need for a guy like... This happens in every sport. This isn't weird.
What about Eddie Howe? Or what about Gary Rowett? Or,
by the way, well, I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But Eddie Howe is managing. He has a job that I think you'd have to say is better than Frank Lampard's job.
Yeah, but he brought them up. Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. I think there's a sense that these players, that their name gets them, kind of makes them skip the queue a little bit.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'll be honest, I don't really have a big opinion on it.
That's
not
going to
force
fine.
Something that that's I don't fine. Really care about. At CO Soccer Pod on Twitter or caughtoffsidepod at gmail.com. And I wanted to just, like we mentioned before, that Lee Sterling sent us this great letter, said, Andrew and JJ, longtime Caught Offside CO Soccer Pod listener here in the Northwest, Sounders season ticket holder. Also, Fulham, America's Team fan, Beer Maven, etc., etc. Anyway, after your last podcast, I had to send you something.
Oh.
I work part-time at a local winery. JJ, so there's this big box here. There's wine in it.
Get out!
Yeah, the one, JJ, is for you. It's called The Instigator. That's for you. This is a really fine wine. Enjoy it with a steak or something hearty. The one for me is, Andrew, the, what is it? The Chandler Reach Correa is for you. This Super Tuscan is a bit mellower.
Drink I've just Italian reached down food. To get a bottle of Instigator. Oh, look at that.
And then the Riff Raff, he says, is a fun red, a hamburger wine. Whoever has it will love it.
Sorry, how kind is this?
This is unbelievable.
This is above and beyond.
He says, none of these are available outside the state of Washington, so this will be a one-off for you. Enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoy the podcast. That is awesome, Lee
look,
Sterling.
Look at the label on the Instigator. It looks like me.
Ugh.
Well, that is your... awesome. 2015. A Shiraz.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... Lee. Ah.
Super cool.
Unbelievable.
Yep. So we're going to drink these as we take a quick break here. But don't go anywhere because you'll see what sort of condition we're in on the other side.
You do it for the international.
It's Wilson. Oh, it's magnificent. Fantastic from Harry Wilson.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. Yeah. We didn't mention that earlier when we were going around some of the internationals, JJ. Ireland falling to Wales in Dublin. Oh, no.
This is as bad a calendar year as I've ever remembered supporting this team.
Really?
Yep, it's the worst. It's the
infighting, the results.
The infighting, the results, the style of play, everything. But kudos to Wales and Ryan Giggs, who now will basically play Denmark at home next month to decide who wins Group B1 in the Nations League. Yeah. Or B, whatever we are.
And who knows if Christian Eriksen will be a part of that for the Danes.
Hey, listen, credit to Ryan Giggs. He has hit the ground running in that job.
Quick, what to watch for? Very quick. EPL Saturday, 7:30 a.m., Chelsea and Manchester United in a very important game here. An important couple of games coming up for United. They've got this, followed by Juventus in the Champions League. I saw an interesting article that I wanted to bring up to you at ESPN FC from Rob Dawson about Alexis Sanchez and his, I mean, he's like...
Slump.
Now he did have a big goal recently, but he's like, by and large, kind of been the invisible man for them, which who would have ever thought when they made that signing? Here's some of the stats that Rob points out in this article. So far this season, Sanchez has been directly involved in a goal once every 333 minutes. Not scored a goal, involved in a goal, assist or score. Last season when he moved to United, that number was once every 209 minutes. Let's put that in perspective. In 3.5 years with Arsenal, he never had a season worse than being directly involved in a goal once every 151 minutes. In his best year, it was once every 95 minutes. Basically, once a game, he was either setting up or scoring a goal. He averaged a goal basically every two games for the Gunners. At United, it's one in every six games. He is in some ways kind of like the poster boy of a larger problem for United beyond just Alexis Sanchez. And it might be, with all the things that you want to say about Jose Mourinho and the problems that he has experienced at Manchester United, there may be no greater problem for Jose when you look at his tenure there than this. JJ, who is the player under Mourinho at United that has gotten better since Jose arrived?
Like Scott McTominay.
Okay. Yeah.
Because
right,
he's
fine.
Just got games.
Because he's playing.
Right.
Like he's gone from zero to whatever. But like, yeah. Lukaku, I don't know that you could say right now has gotten better. Pogba, I don't think you could say it. Alexis Sanchez, you certainly couldn't say it. What about, you know, Martial? No way. Mkhitaryan, not even there anymore. What a big signing that was. Certainly not Luke Shaw. Not any of the defenders, quite frankly. No one, really no one of his key players has gotten better. That is a problem.
Ashley Young.
Maybe.
Arguable.
Yeah.
That is a huge problem.
There's no other top manager that I feel like you could say that about.
Going back to Sanchez, we did bang the drum about he's been pretty much on the go since Copa America 2013. Is that, yeah.
You're wondering if it's all catching up with him?
And he signed his contract in his 30s and we said, ooh, miles on the clock. And he was in a little bit of a slump towards the end of his Arsenal run and we thought, oh, it's because he'd stopped playing or he knew he was going out the door. I don't know, man. There's a lot of miles on that clock.
It's true, but he's not the only one.
2014 World Cup. 2015 Copa America, 2016 Copa America.
Possibly, I don't know. But it's, like I said,
It's not like they
problem.
Went to the World Cup in 2018, so you would have got a rest. I don't know.
And then Saturday, 10 a.m., a little London derby, West Ham and Spurs.
They
West Ham have been
you.
A real bogey, a real thorn in the side of Tottenham of late. Last year, the 1-1 draw, the 3-2 win last October for West Ham. Remember, West Ham were the side that basically ended Tottenham's title run the year that Spurs were kind of contending against Chelsea. They've been this like frustrating side for Spurs to play against. This one's going to be at the London Stadium. Tottenham have been in good form of late. Harry Kane is back in good form, so this is important for Spurs, certainly important to keep pace with the top. Tottenham right now are fifth, tied on points with Arsenal. They each have 18 points.
And West Ham had that disappointing result on the Friday night against Brighton away, which kind of stymied their run of good form a little bit. So they'll be looking to bounce back, and what better way to do it than to frustrate Spurs?
Yeah, we move to La Liga Saturday, 2:45, number one versus number two, Sevilla Barcelona in Barcelona. Sevilla, of course, right now top of the table on 16 points. Barcelona just behind them on 15 points. So this now is the we now start to find out if Sevilla are up for this. It's super early in the season still, just 8 games played. But are they ready to really, truly contend with the Giants of Spain?
I was going to say it's their first test, but they've already hammered Real Madrid at home.
Yeah,
so
3-0.
Yeah, no, but this isn't. It's another test. Can they consolidate and keep going? And you know, a draw or a good result in this one puts them firmly in the frame.
Absolutely, certainly does. MLS, we should say, as we're recording this, you know what? It's just gone final. DC United has defeated Toronto FC. So those two games that DC had at hand turn into 6 points for them, and they continue their climb up the table, and Montreal fans have got to be nervous. Sunday, 3 o'clock, the Union hosting the Red Bulls.
The Turnpike Derby.
Yeah, as the supporter shield is still up for grabs, the Red Bulls 1 point behind Atlanta United FC, who at that same time will be hosting the Chicago Fire, who right now sits second from the bottom in the Eastern Conference on 31 points. So you would expect Atlanta to win. I don't know if you can say exactly the same, certainly, about the Red Bulls going to Philly. Montreal hosting Toronto, and it's now becoming kind of desperate times for Montreal as DC United control their own destiny. Wayne Rooney tonight scored a brilliant... They won 1-0. He scored in the 18th minute on a brilliant free kick from, I mean, when you see it, I don't know, 30 yards, 30, maybe more, yards out.
Wow.
Yeah. So they are now in the driver's seat for that 6th and final playoff spot. And then Sunday, 5 o'clock, FC Dallas and Sporting Kansas City. As Sporting Kansas City 4 points back of Dallas, but with a game at hand. So there's a jumble at the top there between Dallas, LAFC, and Sporting Kansas City. There's a chance that number 1 seed is still up for grabs. Dallas are in that spot right now, but there is still room for some maneuverability potentially. So we will see, of course, how that plays out. And that is our look at what to watch for. There you go, my friend.
Yeah, DC United. A couple of months ago, if you'd have said that, I scoffed at the signing.
But it really did. I mean,
I didn't so much scoff at it.
You did. I think I remember you did do that.
Yeah. You wouldn't let me forget.
Well.
I'll tell you, at the weekend, it was a brilliant win over FC Dallas. They had to do it, and they've done it again tonight. But at the weekend, I was really disappointed about the turnout at the new stadium. I mean, Rooney's on fire. This team is going to the playoffs, looks like it's going to the playoffs, and is going in hot. DC people, you could have another trophy coming to your region.
Oh, well. I mean,
they get into the playoffs. Well, what's to stop them?
Well, some teams that are better than them.
You know what it's like, Andrew. Houston last year crawled in, and they went on that run.
Right, but they didn't
knocked out the Portland Timbers. It doesn't matter.
Well, you just said DC could bring home a trophy. I'm saying that's really hard to do.
They could go deep. I'm telling you.
Well,
MLS is harem scarum. You just don't know what's going to happen.
There's a lot of harem scarum.
All right.
Well, this was a lot of fun, my friend. Like I said, I'm going to a wedding. I haven't been to one in a while. I'm ready to dance.
Oh, you used to be a big wedding guy.
One of the biggest wedding guys in the business. Johnny Wedding. But it should be fun. I'm actually, my parents are coming up and taking, they're kidnapping my son and taking him back to Philadelphia. And so this will be kind of like, I will miss him.
Cruel punishment to take him there. There's no need for that.
He's been so fun, and like he's such a fun kid. But my wife and I haven't had like a weekend like this where we can like sleep in and just like do whatever.
You can awkwardly dance with her.
Look, man, at weddings, I get down. Forget about it.
I want that. I get down. Forget about it. Yeah. I need that as a drop. That might be the whitest thing you've ever said.
You think?
Yeah, it's up there.
It's a long list.
It is a long list.
It's a very long list.
I go to a wedding, I get down.
Well, what do you do?
I just drink in the corner and mock people.
Oh. You don't dance at weddings?
Of course I do.
So what do you do? How would you describe what you do?
Feet of Flames mixed with MC Hammer.
Well, it should be fun when I'm getting down on the dance floor. Hey. To you, I say,
take it later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.